Well, I wanted to talk to you about the arguments of evolution and anti-evolution. My theme is that organic evolution, that is the evolution of life, has never been observed. And the second thought that I have for you, the first one was last week, is acquired characteristics. Now, to explain, acquired characteristics are characteristics gained after birth. And they cannot be inherited. I remember early on in my grade school, someplace along the line, somebody said that we have a little finger because we haven't used it much. And so without being used, then it dwindles away. And that in the years to come, if we aren't piano players or keyboard artists or something, then the children will be born without a little finger. And found out that was just malarkey. It was just pipe dreams. So, I'll apologize because this is a lot of scientific mumbo-jumbo, but the point I'm making here by quoting these things is that the evolutionists themselves, and most scientists are evolutionists by default, because that's what everybody says. And they're not going to be the ones saying, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. It was wonderful to hear our evangelist talk about the fellow that helped get the Hubble telescope up. And he stopped being an atheist because it revealed such design. And you can't get design. If you've seen a Jackson Pollock painting, you can't get chaos and design is the same thing, see? So he can picture chaos, but he can't get true design. But purpose and intellect can show a design. So the false belief that acquired characteristics can be inherited is called Lamarckism, because Lamarck was one of those guys, even before Darwin, who assumed that that's what it was true. It would mean that the environment can directly and beneficially change egg and sperm cells. See, the somatic cells, the body cells, cells of the body, don't determine what a baby is going to be. It's the genetic cells. So whatever affects the somatic cells, I mean, some dictator doesn't like a certain family, so he cuts off the little finger of every child that's born. The next generation is going to have a little finger, you know. He's not going to wipe that out from that family. It just can't happen. It's just body cells. You'd have to deal with the DNA. So that's where change and supposed evolution would have to come. So what we're seeing here is that this is something that they're still holding on to, that somehow it just happens like that. Now, only a few biologists tried to justify Lamarckism. The minor acquired characteristics they cite have no real significance for any present theory of organic evolution. And you can see that article in Nature, January 1989. So they've been dealing with this for a long time. For examples, the large muscles acquired by a man in a weightlifting program cannot be inherited by his child. Now, Jeb Porter, just naturally a very strong person, and his dad was a strong person. Well, this is the way they were built, not something that the dad achieved and was passed on to his children. Why do giraffes have long necks? Because their ancestors stretched up to try to reach, you know, and no, they were made to be able to eat up high where everybody else was eating down below. That was a design. It didn't happen because they stretched their necks. So while almost all evolutionists agree that acquired characteristics cannot be inherited, many unconsciously slip into this false belief when they're arguing, when they're talking. And on occasion, Darwin did. This hypothesis, which Darwin called pangenesis, maintained the idea of inheritance of acquired characteristics. A.M. Winchester points that out in his book, Genetics. However, stressful environments for some animals and plants cause their offspring to express various defenses. That's a complex way of saying, and I'm copying this, not writing it. What we have found is that a story I've told before, there was a type of fish that lived in the blackness of caves in the water under a cave. And they didn't have any eyeballs. I mean, it was just skin over. So then a discovery was made that some of those fish were taken out and put in an aquarium and studied that way. And when they had children, baby fishes, they had eyeballs. And they said, amazing, evolution in one generation. I thought it was just little tiny part by little tiny part, and that by accident, see. So the astounding concept here is that they were genetically programmed to react to their environment. So then they studied it out, and that there was some iodine or something offensive to eyes in the cave water. So they were just born without eyeballs. When that was removed, the eyeballs came back. This was a switch already implanted in them genetically. And that's what he's going to point out here. Not about the fish, but other situations. Other stressful environments for some animals express various defenses. New genetic traits are not created. Those eyeballs were not created in one generation. Instead, the environment can switch on genetic machinery already present. Here's the thing. The person who made the fish knew that if they were in the iodine water, the eyeballs wouldn't work. So they had a genetic switch. If they were living in that, people with burning eyeballs would have children without eyeballs. The marvel is that optimal genetic machinery already exists to handle some contingencies. Not that time, the environment, or a need can produce the machinery. This isn't something that evolves in one generation. It's something prepared for them to handle those emergencies. In writing about this amazing capability, Quaich admits, it is a perplexing evolutionary question, can't you imagine, how a population might move to a different local optimum without an intervening period of reduced fitness, adaptive valley, without evolution, in other words. It just pops into a change. That was Christine Quaich, or Quaich, and tells you where to find that in the book, the magazine Nature. Another, non-lethal exposure of an animal to carnivores and a plant to a herbivore not only induces a defense, but causes the attacked organisms to produce offspring that are better defended than offspring from unthreatened parents. So in these cases, and I don't know what they're talking about, it just is a summary, they found that when these attacked organisms were present, the children were born better fitted to handle it. The person designing the genetic structure recognized that could happen and was prepared for it. Hidden genetic diversity exists within species and can erupt when environmental conditions change. John Davis in Science News. Again, environmental stress can reveal genetic variants. So they're calling it genetic variants. These are the various ways that the child can grow, the baby. Presumably, because it compromises buffering systems. If selected for, these uncovered phenotypes can lead to heritable changes in plants and animals. Assimilation. So it's just describing the situation and saying there is no evolutionary answer for that. Also, rates of variation within a species, microevolution, not macroevolution, increase enormously when organisms are under stress, such as starvation. Certain things happen more rapidly with these variations. If something happens that increases their ability or changes what their body can handle to eat. And can organisms speed their own evolution? Well, it's not evolution if it just happens. It's something that's already built within them in the magazine Science. So, my conclusion is stressful situations would have been widespread in the centuries after a global flood. So, there would have been probably a lot of changes. However, if things went back to another way, to a different way, a way that used to be, like before the flood, these animals that came off the ark produced babies that were more adapted to where they were now. And that fine-tuning as they spread out over the entire world, spread out over those centuries. So just something to keep in mind and recognize that God planned it ahead. So we have a great God.